Thus, if I heard on one occasion the Blessed One was living at Sawati in Jetta's Grove, Enath, and Vindika's Park. There the Blessed One addressed the monks thus, "Monks, Venerable Sir," they replied, "the Blessed One said this, 'I shall teach you a summary and an exposition. Listen and attend closely to what I shall say.'" "Yes, Venerable Sir," the monks replied, "the Blessed One said this, 'A person should examine things in such a way that while he is examining them, his consciousness is not distracted and scattered externally, nor stuck internally. And by not craving and clinging, he does not become agitated. If his consciousness is not distracted and scattered externally, nor stuck internally, and if by not clinging he does not become agitated, then for him there is no origination of suffering, of birth, aging, and death in the future.'" That is what the Blessed One said. Having said this, the Sublime One rose from his seat and went into his dwelling. Now, every time the Buddha gave a short exposition like this, if the monks don't ask him questions, then he gets up and leaves. This is why asking questions is real important. Then, soon after the Blessed One had gone, the monks considered, "Now, friends, the Blessed One has risen from his seat and gone into his dwelling. After giving a summary in brief, without expounding the detailed meaning, now who will expound this in detail?" Then they considered the Venerable Mahakachana, is praised by the teacher and esteemed by his wise companions in the holy life. He is capable of expounding the detailed meaning. Suppose we went to him and asked him the meaning of this. Then the monks went to the Venerable Mahakachana and exchanged greetings with him. When this courteous and amiable talk was finished, they sat down at one side and they told him what had taken place, adding, "Let the Venerable Mahakachana expound it to us." The Venerable Mahakachana replied, "Friends, it is though a man needing heartwood, seeking heartwood, wandering in search of heartwood, thought that heartwood should be sought for among the branches and leaves of a great tree standing, possessed of heartwood, after he passed over the root and the trunk. So it is with you, Venerable Sirs, that you think I should be asked about the meaning of this after you pass the Blessed One by. When you were face to face with the teacher, for knowing the Blessed One knows, seeing he sees, he is vision, he is knowledge, he is the Dhamma, he is the Holy One, he is the sayer, the proclaimer, the elucidator of meaning, the giver of the deathless, the Lord of the Dhamma, the Tathagata, That was the time when you should have asked the Blessed One the meaning as he told you, so you should have remembered it. Then listen, friends, and attend closely to what I shall say. Yes, friend, the monks replied. The Venerable Mahakachana said this. How, friends, is consciousness called distracted and scattered externally? Now, this is talking about restlessness. This is talking about distractions that pull you away from your object of meditation. Here, when a monk has seen a form with the eye, if his consciousness follows after that form, it is tied and shackled by gratification in the sign of the form. It's fettered by the fetter of gratification in the sign of the form. Then his consciousness is called distracted and scattered externally. If you keep your attention on whatever that distraction is that causes you to have more and more restlessness. So you don't keep your attention. That's what the six R's are all about. You recognize that you have a distracted mind. You release the distraction by not keeping your attention on it. Let it be there by itself. You relax the tightness caused in your head, caused by that distraction. You bring up something wholesome. Smile. You return to your object of meditation with a light, smiling mind. And stay with your object of meditation as long as you can, without holding on tightly, like you were doing. When he has heard a sound with the ear, if his consciousness follows after the sign of that sound, it is tied and shackled by gratification in the sign of that sound. It's fettered by the fetter of gratification in the sign of the sound. Then his consciousness is called distracted and scattered externally. When he has smelt an odor with the nose, if his consciousness follows after that sign of odor, it is tied and shackled by gratification in the sign. It is fettered by the fetter of gratification in the sign of the odor. Then his consciousness is called distracted and scattered externally. When he has tasted a flavor with the tongue, if his consciousness follows after the sign of that taste, it is tied and shackled by gratification in the sign of that taste. It's fettered by the fetter of gratification in the sign of that taste. Then his consciousness is called distracted and scattered externally. When he has been touched by a tangible with the body, if his consciousness follows after the sign of that tangible, it is tied and shackled by gratification in the sign of the tangible. It's fettered by the fetter of gratification in the sign of the tangible. Then his consciousness is called distracted and scattered externally. So we're talking about with any of the sense doors. If you like it, you're going to stay with it. When you stay with it, your mind starts thinking. When your mind starts thinking, then other thoughts come in. Now, the definition of mindfulness is remembering to observe how mind's attention moves from one thing to another. You don't follow what mind wants to do. You have to use the six R's. Your job is only to observe. And the more closely you observe how these distractions arise, the easier it is to let them go, relax into them, bring up something wholesome, and stay with the wholesome. When he has cognized a mind object with mind, if his consciousness follows after the sign of the mind object and is tied and shackled by gratification in the sign of the mind object. See, as soon as you notice that your mind is not on your object to meditation, you need the 6R. Don't keep your attention on that distraction. Oh, but pain arose in my body. So? You keep your attention on the pain, what's going to happen? That pain is going to continue. Let it be there by itself. Don't get involved in liking and disliking. Oh, but I have a pain in my neck. What is that? It's a painful feeling, right? What happens right after a feeling arises? I don't like it. I'm taking it personally and I'm going to get involved with it. And the more you get involved with it, the bigger and more intense that feeling becomes. You're causing yourself a lot of suffering because you're taking that pain personally. It hurts. That's the definition of a painful feeling. Did you know that the painful feeling when it arises is mental? It's not physical? But you want to get involved with it and say, oh, I have a pain in my back, I have a pain in my knee, I have a pain in my neck. The truth is, that's only a hindrance that will fade away by itself, unless you take it personally and you become over-concerned and you start thinking about that and not staying on your object of meditation. So it's real important to understand these mind objects. When they come up, you have to recognize them as mind objects. You have to see that for yourself. But it hurts. Okay, so? Is that your pain? Did you ask that pain to come up? No. Did you sit there and say, well, I haven't had a pain in my back for a long time. I might as well have a pain now. No. It comes up because conditions are right for it to arise. Why do these kind of meditation pains arise? Why? Because in the past you broke a precept and you took it personally. Now it manifests as painful feeling in mind that you say is in the body. Allow it to be there. What happens when a painful feeling arises? Your mind goes and gets tight. And the more you think about it, the tighter you squeeze on that pain and take it personally. And you turn a regular pain into an emergency. Oh, I have to break my sitting because that pain is so bad. It's just a mental pain. What does the Buddha teach you to do? Allow that pain to be there by itself. It's not yours. If you don't relax and allow it to be, bring up the wholesome with a smile and stay with your object of meditation. If you don't do that, you're going to turn it into a bigger and more intense thing that's just going to take your mind, and it's going to be very scattered by your over-concern. So your mind is going to be shackled with the sign of the mind object. It's going to be fettered. What is a fetter? It's identifying with it. It's taking it personally. I don't like this. It hurts. I want it to stop. I want it to go away. Whose pain is it? Well, it's mine. What are you doing with your mind? Are you letting it be and not keeping your attention on it? No, you're feeding that with your attention. You're feeding that sensation with your attention. And then you start taking it personally, and then it turns into a lot of mental proliferation and mental emotional reaction. But when it arises, if you see it, you allow it to be, you relax, you smile. Make your mind light. Come back to your object of meditation. It pulls your mind away again. So what? The nature of some kinds of hindrances is they last for a long time. But as you keep fighting it and trying to control it, you are making it worse than it actually is. Now you've heard the stories of I went to a dentist that broke my tooth and I had to have a root canal. And I let him drill on me without any painkiller. Why? Well, I was in Burma and they're not known for their hygiene in Burma. Not with something like this. They don't clean their tools from one patient to the next. So I'm not interested in getting all kinds of problems with my infection and that sort of thing. And this is when the AIDS was still pretty rampant in Burma. No, you're not going to stick me with a needle, sorry. And I made the dentist boil everything for at least 10 minutes so that I didn't have so many problems. Now, if you know what a root canal is, it's a painful thing. They're exposing the nerve. And they'll hit that nerve, and that causes a lot of pain to arise. But because I was focusing on loving kindness, it was bearable. I was staying on my object to meditation. I wasn't fighting with the pain. I wasn't over-concerned with the pain. I allowed the pain to be without wishing that it would stop, wishing that it would go away. I didn't take it personally. There was pain. Sometimes he would hit something and I'd go, my body got really tight. But then I relaxed. I let it be. Relaxed. Smile. Wish loving kindness to even the person that was causing me the pain. Or wish loving kindness to the pain itself. The more you feed whatever arises in the present moment, the more it's going to come up and the bigger and more intense it's going to be. What you think and ponder on. Didn't that sound like something I said a little while ago? That's the inclination of your mind. What do you think and ponder on when you have a pain? How much you don't like it, how much you want it to stop, how much you want it to go away. So that's going to keep happening over and over and over again until you start allowing it to be. When you do this with your mind, and you get into the papancha, the taking it personally, the thinking about it, into the concepts of it, you're not seeing the truth. The truth is, when a pain arises, it's there. You try to fight with it, you try to change it, you try to make it be the way you want to be, you're fighting with the truth. You have to allow it to be there. Don't resist or push. Soften your mind and smile. And how, friends, is consciousness called not distracted and scattered externally here when a person has seen a form with the eye, if his consciousness does not follow after the sign of form, is not tied to it and shackled by gratification of the sign of the form, is not fettered by the fetter of gratification of sign of the form. When his consciousness is called, then his consciousness is called not distracted and scattered externally. When he's heard a sound with the ear, when he smelt an odor with the nose, when he tasted a flavor with the tongue, when he touched a tangible with the body, when he cognized a mind object with mind, if his consciousness does not follow one of these sense doors, it is not tied and shackled by the gratification of the sign. It's not fettered by the fetter of gratification in the sign of one of the sense doors. Then his consciousness is called not distracted and scattered externally. And how, friends, is mind? Called stuck internally. Here, quite secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unwholesome states, a person enters upon and abides in the first jhana, which is accompanied by thinking and examining thought with joy and happiness born of seclusion. If his consciousness follows after the joy and the happiness born of seclusion, is tied and shackled by the gratification of that joy and happiness born of seclusion, then his mind is called stuck internally. Again, with the stilling of thinking and examining thought, a person enters upon and abides in the second jhana, which has self-confidence and stillness of mind, without thinking and examining thought, with joy and happiness born of collectedness. If his consciousness follows after that joy and happiness born of collectedness, then his mind is called stuck internally. You get attached to it. You don't allow your mind to go deeper just because you're fascinated by the joy or happiness or whatever it happens to be. You have to lighten your mind. Allow your mind to go deeper on its own. Again, with the fading away of joy, a monk abides in equanimity, mindful and fully aware, still feeling pleasure with the happiness with the body. He enters upon and abides in the third jhana, on account of which noble ones announce, he has a pleasant abiding who has equanimity and is mindful. If his consciousness follows after that equanimity and holds on tightly, then his mind is called stuck internally. Again, with the abandoning of pleasure and pain, with the previous disappearance of joy and grief, a monk enters upon and abides in the fourth jhana, which has neither pleasure nor pain, and purity of mindfulness due to equanimity. If his consciousness follows after the neither pleasure nor pain, is tied and shackled by liking that state and holding on to it, it's fettered by the fetter of gratification, then his mind is called stuck internally. That is how the mind is called stuck internally. That means being attached, taking it personally, and liking it. I want it to last longer. Well, you stop your progress when you do that. And how, friends, is a mind called not stuck internally? Here, quite secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unwholesome states. A monk enters upon and abides in the first jhana. If his consciousness does not follow after the joy and happiness born of seclusion, is not tied and shackled by the gratification of the joy and happiness born of seclusion, is not fettered by the fetter of gratification in the joy and happiness born of seclusion, then his mind is called not stuck internally. When you get stuck internally, you start complaining to me about tightness in your head. And what do I tell you? You're trying too hard. Stop holding on. Just allow your mind to be as it's going to be. Your job is to observe, not to control. Again, with the stilling of thinking and examining thought, a monk enters upon and abides in the second jhana. If his consciousness does not follow after the joy and happiness born of collectedness, then his mind is called not stuck internally. Again, with the fading away of joy, a monk enters upon and abides in the third jhana. If his consciousness does not follow after that equanimity and hold on to it as if it was a possession, then his mind is called not stuck internally. Again, with the abandoning of pleasure and pain, a monk enters upon and abides in the fourth jhana. If his consciousness is not tied and shackled by gratification, is not fettered by the fetter of gratification, then his mind is called not stuck internally. How, friends, is there agitation due to clinging? Here an untaught ordinary person who has regard for noble ones and is unskilled and undisciplined in their Dhamma, who has no regard for true men and is unskilled and undisciplined in their Dhamma, regards material form as self, or self as possessed of material form, or material form is in self, or self as in material form. That material form of his changes and becomes otherwise. With the change and becoming otherwise of that material form, his consciousness is preoccupied with the change of the material form. Agitated mental states born of preoccupation with the change of material form arise together and remain obsessing his mind. Because his mind is obsessed, he is anxious, distressed, and concerned. And due to craving and clinging, he becomes agitated. Is that speaking to you? How do you let go of the agitation? By not feeding it, by allowing it to be there. The six R's are not designed to make things stop, except for craving. It's not going to make a pain stop. It's not going to make agitation stop. But as you let go of your craving, let go of that tightness in your head and stop trying to control it. Don't become obsessed with something that might happen in the future. Then you're going to let go of your anxiousness and you're not going to be distressed and over-concerned due to craving and clinging. See, every time you let go of that craving, your mind becomes pure, clear. He regards feeling as self. Or self is possessed of feeling, or feeling is in self, or self is in feeling. He regards perception as self. He regards formations as self. He regards consciousness as self, or self is possessed of consciousness, or consciousness is in self, or self is in consciousness. That consciousness of his. Now that means any one of the five aggregates, material form, feeling, perception, formations, and consciousness, any one of these five, when it changes and becomes different, with the change and becoming otherwise of that consciousness, his aggregate is preoccupied with the change. And when you become preoccupied with anything, in other words, you're watching this and you're not staying on your object of meditation, your mind is going to get agitated. Agitated states of mind born of preoccupation with the change of one of these aggregates arise together and remain obsessing his mind. Oh, I have a pain in my body. Who's obsessed? Who wants it to be different? Who wants to change it? Who wants to break their sittings because it's too uncomfortable? Who's attached? Because his mind is obsessed, he gets anxious and frustrated, distressed, over-concerned. Now, instead of doing that, why don't you let that be and come back to your object of meditation? That will fade away on its own. But the more you feed the distraction, the more agitated you become, the more frustrated you become, the more obsessed your mind becomes with it, and you're not staying on your object of meditation. That's your home base. Stay home. And due to craving and clinging, he becomes agitated. That is how there's agitation due to craving and clinging. And how, friends, is their non-agitation due to non-craving and non-clinging? Hear a well-taught noble disciple who has regard for the noble ones, is skilled and disciplined in their Dhamma, who has regard for true men, is skilled and disciplined in their Dhamma, does not regard material form as self. You don't take it personally, or self is possessed of material form, or material form is in self, or self is in material form. That material form of his changes and becomes different. With the change and becoming different of that material form, his consciousness is not preoccupied with the change. Agitated states born of preoccupation with the change of material form do not arise together and remain obsessing his mind. Because his mind is not obsessed, he's not anxious, distressed, or over-concerned due to non-craving and non-clinging. He does not become agitated. He does not regard feeling as self, or self as in feeling, or feeling as in self, or self as in feeling. Agitated mental, he's not agitated the feeling of his changes and becomes different. With the change and becoming different of that feeling, his consciousness is not preoccupied with the change. Not agitated, born of preoccupation with the change of feeling, do not arise together and remain obsessing his mind. Because his mind is not obsessed, he is not anxious, distressed, and concerned due to non-craving and non-clinging. So now this gives you more and more an idea of how truly important it is to use the six R's, not expecting it to make something stop from happening, but to allow it to be there without obsessing on it. The more obsessing you have towards whatever feeling arises, the more you suffer. And you're doing it to yourself. I've had some students come and be angry because they say, I'm doing something to them. I'm not doing anything. I'm just making sure you're staying on the path. You're doing it to yourself. But you're obsessing and looking for external causes for your internal problem. Well, I need somebody to blame for this. I'm not doing it to myself. Well, yeah, you are. Look for excuses. Sometimes people come and they find excuses for everything. This is not excuse central. This is taking self-responsibility for yourself, for your own pain. And watch how your mind, with its old habitual tendencies, gets caught and causes you so much more suffering. So you become anxious, distressed, and concerned. But when you use the six R's, you let go of the craving. You let go of the clinging. Clinging is all of your thoughts, opinions, ideas, concepts, and stories about why you don't want that to be there. But if you let go of craving, clinging won't arise. And if clinging won't arise, your emotional attachment will not arise. If that doesn't arise, the birth of action won't arise. If that doesn't arise, sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair won't arise. But if you take it on and you identify with it even a little bit, if you take it personally, you're going to cause yourself all kinds of suffering. You'll become very anxious and distressed. You'll fight with it. And you're fighting yourself. You're causing yourself that suffering because you're not using the six R's properly. Release means let it be and don't keep your attention on it. Don't become obsessed with whatever that feeling happens to be, or perception, or formation, or consciousness. Allow it to be there by itself. Don't resist or push. Soften your mind. Smile. Bring that soft, smiling mind back to your object of meditation. That's your home. That's where you want your mind to be. Not obsessing about how much you don't like this and how much you're going to fight with it. That is how there is non-agitation due to not craving and not clinging. Friends, when the Blessed One rose from his seat and went into his dwelling after giving a summary in brief, without expounding the detailed meaning, that is, monks, a monk should examine things in such a way that while he is examining them, his consciousness is not distracted and externally or stuck internally, and not by not craving and clinging, he does not become agitated. If his consciousness is not distracted and scattered externally, nor stuck internally, and if by not craving and clinging he does not become agitated, then for him there is no origination of suffering, of birth, aging, and death in the future. I understand the detailed meaning of this summary to be thus. Now, friend, if you wish, go to the Blessed One and ask him about the meaning of this. As the Blessed One explains it to you, so you should remember it. Then the monks, having delighted and rejoiced in the Venerable Mahakachana's words, rose from their seats and went to the Blessed One. After paying homage to him, they sat down at one side and told the Blessed One all that had taken place after he had left, adding, "Then, sir, we went to the Venerable Mahakachana and asked him about the meaning." The Venerable Mahakachana expounded the meaning to us with these terms, statements, and phrases. Mahakachana is wise, monks. Mahakachana has great wisdom. If you had asked me the meaning of this, I would have explained it to you in the same way that Mahakachana has explained it. Such is its meaning, and so you should remember it. That is what the Blessed One said. The monks were satisfied and delighted in the Blessed One's words. So obsessing about things, what does that do for you outside of cause you more pain and suffering? Is it worth it? I don't think so. It's better to let these things go, right? Not obsess. Not find excuses so that you can quit. Do you have any questions? Yeah.
And I was wondering, like, you mentioned about over-obsess and over-fear. So I had one situation, and I don't know, did I overreact or not? So it was driving situation. So I was driving for a couple hours, and after that,
then take responsibility and tell him to stop. Tell him that you want to get out and walk rather than drive with him in a unsafe way. Well, then you drive. You know, you just use a word that is a forbidden word. Mm-hmm. But it's a forbidden word because that just makes an excuse for you to continue on. What did I tell you? There's no but. Okay? So don't obsess with it. I gave you what I thought to be a clear answer that is for your safety. But how many times do you over-obsess with a little tiny pain in your body that you make bigger because you don't like it and you don't want it there? Obsessed with it, and you cause yourself a lot more suffering instead of staying on your object of meditation and let that fade away by itself. You started feeding it. You feed it with your attention. Were you on your object of meditation at all?
Yes.
No, you were thinking all kinds of thoughts about how I don't like it, it must be this, it must be that. That's a scattered mind. It's not a mind that is mindful. It is a mind that is unmindful. Remember, mindfulness is observing how mind's attention moves from one thing to another. You were caught up in it, in continual thinking about it. How many repeat thoughts did you have? Isn't that a way that causes suffering?
Probably.
No, probably is. Yeah. Wholesome emotions? According to Abhidhamma, no. Because there's always attachment with emotions. See, feeling is just feeling until craving arises. Then it's my feeling and I don't like it or I do like it. And then the clinging starts. So you're already in the unwholesome as soon as you allow that craving to arise. All the rest of those links of dependent origination are about unwholesome, about being unwholesome. They're all conditioned things. And that condition leads to the unwholesome. Unless, as soon as you see feeling arise, you relax right at that moment. When you relax, then the rest of the links of dependent origination don't arise. We're talking about two separate, different things. What's your object of meditation? One of the Brahma-viharas, but that's just an object of meditation. That's just your home base. Right?
It's not emotional.
Huh?
It's not emotional.
No, no. It's not emotional at all. You make it unconditional by using the six R's. So that when you have a feeling arise, you relax right then. There is no more craving, there is no more clinging, there is no more habitual tendency, there is no more birth, there is no more sorrow and pain. Because you're purifying your mind when you let go of the craving. Being able to recognize that craving is very important. But we have a real tendency to get caught in our desires and wants for things to be the particular way. I've got to figure this out. I have to think about this. That's why engineers are on number one list of hard people to teach, because they're taught to think. And they try to solve all problems by thinking. And thinking is a hindrance. When you have a very quiet mind that's pure, your intuition will come up and solve problems for you without thinking. You'll see. Now, last night I had you listen to a Dhamma talk that I gave at the Easter retreat. And I kept on trying to get you to understand that you have to sometimes ask yourself, why does this hindrance keep coming up over and over again? What is it that I'm attached to? Your intuition will tell you. Then you can change and let it go, and your mind becomes very peaceful and calm. Six are.
Sometimes I'll be focused on the meditation object. Undercurrent of thoughts.
Ignore those. Okay. Only when your mind gets pulled away, then you use the six R's.
Okay.
Or if you're
the same as the pain or not.
No. Your mind is, as long as you're staying on your object of meditation, any thoughts that come in, your mind just trying to trick you, to entice you to think about this or that, just ignore that and stay with your object of meditation. Stay with your spiritual friend. It will stop doing that after a period of time. But when you're doing the six R's, you don't repeat the six R's in your mind. You do what it says to do. You let it be, relax, smile, come back. Now, one of the reasons that there's not so much progress in the meditation right now is because you're letting your mind ho-hum and think about this and think about that when you're not sitting. And your job is to stay with your object of meditation all the time. I don't care what you're doing. And you hear me talk about smiling. Smiling helps your mindfulness to get better. The more you smile, the easier it is to recognize when you start to get caught. And you can let go of that more easily. Yeah.
There was a dispute this morning about a question came up. Is the equanimity in, say, the third jhana different than the equanimity of the Brahman?
Yes. In the Brahma Vihara, the equanimity at the realm of nothingness is much, much stronger. More settled, more at ease.
It's a strength.
It's a strength. The actual feeling itself is the same, but because you're going so much deeper, and you're staying with your object of meditation for a much longer period of time, your mind starts to develop disenchantment towards things where there's not so, it's not excited.
Yeah, it becomes a real feeling.
Yeah.
That's actually there.
Yeah.
Instead of,
well, that's the problem with using language. How do you describe equanimity? And the closest I can come is a very strong balance, a non-excitement. And that's the way I'm seeing ants around here.
I think it's too hot.
But that's the equanimity is there in every one of the different stages of jhana. It just gets stronger and stronger as you go deeper. At first you don't know that, notice the equanimity so much, but it's there. Then when you get to the third jhana and fourth jhana, you start noticing it quite a bit more, and there is very strong balance. But when you get into the Brahma Viharas, it's much more subtle. And your mind is quiet enough that you can actually see more clearly how things start to arise. That happens with this kind of meditation is your sense of humor starts changing. And you stop laughing at things. You don't laugh so out loud so much. But your mind is light and it sees how crazy mind can be. And you're aware of this craziness and it just makes you smile. Laugh with it, especially when you have an attachment. I had one student, he's been my student for a long time, and he said he was really being attacked by a lot of hindrances. What should I do? I told him, go outside for a walk and laugh. other people were outside and they're watching him walk around laughing. Every time a hindrance comes up, laugh with it. It's not yours. And he did it literally. Well, something's wrong with that guy. He's laughing all the time. Yeah, it's fine. No problem. When you laugh, you change your perspective. When you change your perspective, you go from taking it personally to seeing the impersonal nature of it. Especially with big things like fear. It's real easy to get caught in fear, or frustration, or boredom, or whatever it happens to be. It's just your mind trying to distract you. That's all. Stay with your object of meditation. Laugh with it if you're really starting to get caught in it. Okay? I told you, I want you to have fun. Well, your idea of fun and mine are not necessarily the same.
Yeah, I think having fun doesn't mean you have to be laughing.
No.
You can just be very interested.
You can be very, enjoy it very much. Did you get a chance to listen to the, did you? Did you notice? I didn't ask him a question. He said, you know, everything in life is fun.
Dispensation. Sad.